this wonderful life.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I'm joined in the studio by Mr. Michael Brox, a retired educator from Milwaukee Public Schools. You know, Mike.
Yes.
I wanted to get to a point in the conversation because there's so many people, and it's quick to point the finger and say that Milwaukee Public Schools is a failing district, and so it needs to be separated. We need to tear it apart and start all over again. And yet the people who are making those statements, which I think are just asinine, don't know and don't have a plan themselves. To say that I want four separate districts, meaning a superintendent over each one of those districts, and break it all up, and somehow we're going to get a better system, not realizing that even if we did break it all up, we'll take kids out of their neighborhood schools, the schools that they're right now doing something positive. Let's be clear. Everybody in Milwaukee Public Schools is not failing.
That's right.
The majority of the people in Milwaukee Public Schools are succeeding. So, but there's this misconception that the entire district is a failing district.
Well, you know, as the squeaky wheel catches the oil, as they say. And a lot of times the negative is picked up on because that's what sales newspapers, you know, to use that figure of speech. But many of the students are excited about going to school. You have a lot of good teachers in the school system, and they want to succeed. But, Earl, that you brought up earlier that it's a disproportionate number of students. It's not the majority, but it's too many students who do have behavior problems in the school. And that is not gender central. That's the boys and the girls. And I found out in the most part that a lot of the situation is a lot of the disruptive behavior is coming from the girls in the schools.
No question.
Which like I said, I worked at in structured, private, and public settings, and that's been the case. But again, we talked about it before. You know, a lot of it is because due to the attention factor. Wanting attention.
Well, so when you talk about the girls, they're sending a message to the society that something has happened. In many instances, young girls are developing a lot earlier than they did physically when we were in school. Many of those young people have been molested, boys and girls.
Yes, sir.
We live in a society. Mm-hmm. That is sick.
Mm-hmm.
And so even inside of their own families,
yes,
that has happened. And so and they don't get the kind of support that they need to overcome that. So they act out in a manner commensurate with somebody who's been hurt.
Well, and I also found, you know, in my experience, because I've taught I give equal attention to all my students, boys, girls, the high-functioning, low-functioning students, whatever their situation is. Everybody's got an equal opportunity at me. So, and I found that, and I do, I sit down, I have conversations with my, you know, female students in the classroom, and they're very, very responsive to that. A lot of times, I think it's important, but I really think it's important to have people in those classrooms, especially in the Milwaukee area, southeastern Wisconsin, to have teachers in there that reflect their student population. I think that's really important in terms of making that connect with those students.
So, who could argue against that? I want to go back to,
but there doesn't seem, if I may, excuse me for interrupting, but there doesn't seem to be a will, because we have to look at the source and how teachers are certified and how they get into those classrooms in the first place.
But I want to go back before we get to the teacher aspect of it, because when you see children that have been molested and nobody has, young children, and nobody has responded. I mean, who would have ever thought that priests would have been molesting children?
Who would have thought? Who would have thought?
Okay, so that priests weren't the only people molesting children. There are all sorts of people who molest children. And so young children don't know how to deal with that. Adults don't know how to deal with that. So if that's happened to children, and there hasn't been any healing, and nobody has addressed it, you know, because I've seen, as you have, that if you talk to any administrator in Milwaukee Public Schools, and I'm sure it's that way across the nation, the girls are, for the most part, at the root of most of the problems with, you know.
Molestation?
No, with the arguments and the fighting.
Right, the behavior. Yeah, the behavior. Yeah. Right. Well, yeah. Well, they you got your set-offs, you know, the ones that, you know, they come in and they're there for one reason to set it off.
Right. But again, I'm challenging why they want to set it off, because that's something that's happened in their lives, you know, that they have that kind of anger and willing to do that. So all of these things are at the root of what's happening when we talk about the fact that kids can't be educated or kids aren't being educated.
they it's how you educate them. It's how you get to them, because a lot of set of circumstances were created outside that classroom. It wasn't created by the teacher. The teacher is there to respond, react, and to make sure that their students can, you know, adjust and learn and become productive citizens, contributing members of society. So, you know, you have, you have to look at what's going on outside of the classroom. And you know what? I've had parents, and I hate to say it, I even had some grandparents who I was teaching their grandchildren, and I've taught them. So we're talking about third generation, and the student and their grandparents were a piece of work too. So and we talk about it all the time. It's nothing new, you know. And they say, well, you know, she came by it righteously, because I've had, you know, some of my young ladies and young men, they were set offs in the classroom. But once you establish that relationship with, you know, with their families and whatnot, and understand what they're doing, so they came by it right. They think it's okay. They think it's okay. They come in the classroom, we'll cuss you out. And then you have to write them up or whatever, you know. But teachers have to have thick skin at the same time.
So let's get to this point. Man. Okay. Let's get to this point. So at the root of all of this is that Milwaukee Public Schools is a horrible district that has to be disbanded because we've got a better way to educate children, and it's called private schools. And so when I was, a young parent, my wife and I chose to put, my son into a private school, right? There was no vouchers. We paid for that out of our pockets. That was the way the system went. And so I thought that the grass was greener on the other side. You know, I wanted my son to experience what I experienced, and to go to a district where the majority of the people didn't look like him. Because I too was confused and thought that maybe if he went somewhere else, things would be better. But I've learned over the decades that that's not reason or rationale enough to put somebody into an environment that may be completely different for them. You know, as I stated before in this program, I was in a segregated reality from kindergarten through sixth grade. Everybody was black. The principals, the teachers, the neighborhood, the community. But from sixth grade to seventh grade, busing, open housing, I went from an all-black reality to a 95% white reality.
You did.
Yeah. And many others did from my generation. That busing came into existence in the civil and all those things. And so we moved into a neighborhood that was, you know,
That's
95% white.
Well,
so the, mm-hmm. so the experience
sure.
and the development of myself as a person, as a human being,
mm-hmm.
was invaluable in my life because I learned to deal with different things. So I wanted my son to experience that same reality because I think that's invaluable.
Mm-hmm.
But later on in life, I realized my son wasn't me. And so he couldn't make the adjustments or deal with the pressures of going from an all-black reality to now almost an all-white one.
Well,
at okay. such a young age, which is what happens many times when people wind up putting their kids in these different school systems.
Right.
Have you heard some of the horror stories?
Well, you know, it's usually blacks going into a white
That's
system.
That's what I mean.
Because white people are not sending their kids to black
schools. I know.
So the experience.
Have you heard some of the horror stories of what parents and their children wind up dealing with once that happens?
Once they go into, well.
Leave the public school system, go into.
Into a white. White. Well, then when they come back and try to go back to, you know, their environment in the central city, which may be depressed, dysfunction, everything else. Now you're trying to act white because because your diction is better.
Let me do this. We got to go to break.
Yes.
Phone lines are open. 844-967-2789. You know, we're going to get into some conversations that you're not going to hear anywhere else. If you know me, that's what it's going to be. You can join us. 844-967-2789.
Right.
Michael Brox is my guest. We'll be right back. You went to parochial school, right? All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. In the studio is my good friend Michael Brox, as we are having an elongated conversation about education and what's at the root of failure in education. And, you know, it's too easy to just say that the school system is failing. We have a society that's failing. Mm-hmm. And to expect the school system to separate itself from a failing society, it's what's at the root of many of the issues that we are dealing with. And if people aren't willing to face that fact, then things are never going to get better. Tom from L.A. Hey, Tom, how you doing, man? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Hey, good morning. First off, we
good morning.
The people.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir. First off, we the people are the government, and ultimately, and you must never forget that. Second, I am a proud FDR Democrat. What I'd like to say is, and I'm just some dumb white guy here, so and my white privilege probably will show in terms of what I'm going to say.
Okay.
But I have friends like here in the Compton area in California. One of my friends, who happens to be black, she, very very intelligent girl. But the thing is, when she was in school, her auntie was an English teacher, so she was taught, you know, to speak proper English and all of that.
Mm-hmm, yes.
But there were all of these other kids in the school system that would beat her up because of the fact that she would not speak with a dialect.
What is called the King's English.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Okay. There you go. All I'm saying is, why is it that somewhere in society, because we all know that in business, we have to be able to speak clearly. We have to be able to
articulate, communicate.
Articulate, things like that, in order to be successful. And what I find just appalling is that somewhere, either government, society, whatever it is, has done something that has actually held back people of color against themselves because of the fact that if you want to fit in and not get beat up, I guess, and maybe this is just a one-touch scenario, I don't know. But the thing was, it just seems to me that it's things that are holding people back from succeeding. I'm sure when they go to those charter schools, they're expected to speak more of the Queen's English or whatever.
Tom, let me dispel the myth that has been going around for a long time, and that's that, you know, black kids who speak the King's English are generally brutalized in the communities and in the schools. That's a myth. And, you know, I don't speak the King's English. You know, I'm going to split some verbs and put some adjectives where they shouldn't be and some nouns. I mean, if you want King's English, then don't listen to Earl Ingram. I'm not talking about you, Tom, but I'm speaking to people and a society
in general
that values and says that. Because
I think you speak wonderful.
But Tom, what I'm saying is, what happens is, if you don't listen, if you eliminate what a person is saying, which may be of value, because they don't speak the King's English, what people should do is listen to what people are saying, not how they say it. Because you miss so much in the society by expecting people to speak from that aspect of things. And so
how do we as a society get these kids to understand that the way to be successful is, and again, in this world of capitalism or whatever you want to call it, how do we get them to be successful, not by speaking proper English of any kind?
Tom, we live in a society where the society is still segregated. And mm-hmm. so in many areas where these young people are raised, there are very few, if any, whites who are speaking that King's English. So this is what they're exposed to. And so if they don't get someone or at some point in time are exposed to that, then to me, they shouldn't be held back or penalized because they haven't had access to the King's English.
I agree with you on that, 100%.
But we know that's not the case. We do know that we live in a society that does hold them back for that. Mike, you want to respond?
Yes, if I may say it. And Tom, that's your name, sir?
Yes.
You bring up some really good, valid points. But what thing do we have to do? Well, there's a couple things. But first of all, it's the dumbing down of our students in the classroom. Expectations are low. We've gotten to the point in the school system where we put up with a lot of things. And teachers are no longer teaching. What we're doing is allow students to learn what they want to learn in the classroom. And all we're doing is directing. And we're more concerned with behavior management than we are instruction. So that's one of the situations. And students are intelligent, and they want the structure. They come to school for the structure. I mean, it's a lot of students that act up.
100%.
They want it. And a lot of them act up so they can go to summer school, and, you know, they're under pressure, and they can deal with their teacher, and they can rapport with them, especially a lot of our older students who are facing the reality, our juniors and seniors who are facing the reality that, hey, this is the safe haven is over. You're going to be out in society, especially in your area in California where you're from. You know, school is the safe haven.
It's the safe haven in Milwaukee.
It's the safe haven.
And I will tell you another thing, if I may, is that, you know, we spend $62,300 a year on a prisoner, mm-hmm. but we spend $9,100 on school. So why are we not getting to the core, the foundation of the problem. You know, one of my heroes, at least in the movie, was Lean on Me, was that Joe Clark. I don't know, he might have been a jerk, but at least Morgan Freeman played him very, very well.
Right.
You know, in terms of me as a football coach, when I coach my kids, I tell them when they start, you know, kind of dogging on each other, I say, hey, guys, look, the whole society is against you. You guys need to stick together. You're 11 people on this squad right here on the offensive team. You don't need to be putting each other down. You got enough people putting you down.
So
you guys all need to come together and get this ball to the end.
So Tom, you said something that is at the root of all of it, and you told them the whole society is against them. My question to that is, why? Okay, so a society that is predisposed to be against a group of people and yet then condemns said group. No, you're right. And then condemns.
But I'm talking about white kids, black kids, everyone.
I know. Right. Hey, Tom, no, I got you. Tom, I understand. We got to go to break. Thank you very much for the call.
Thanks.
We'll be right back.
Over there on Hopkins. My team, Larry Powell. Okay. I was here.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. In the studio, my good friend, Mr. Michael Brox, he's a recently retired educator. Now let's get down to the brass tacks. I want to challenge people who somehow think that educating children is an easy undertaking, and who think that, you know, a system. Here's one of the things that most don't know about Milwaukee public schools and public schools in urban centers across the nation. They're a social service agency as well as an educational institution. What do I mean? You know, kids come to school. And the school, first thing it does is feed them breakfast. I've noticed over the years during the winter, kids come to school in Milwaukee, as cold as it is. They don't have coats. They don't have hats.
Socks.
They don't have socks. They don't have gloves. They don't have belts. And yet they make it to school in the deplorable 10, 15, 20 degrees, and they come to school. So the first thing the school does is feeds them breakfast and then find them some socks and the things that they should already have. And yet education comes after all of those things, settle them down before they can be educated. Stop me if I'm saying something that's incorrect.
No.
So that's on the grade school level, the middle school level, the high school level.
That's right.
That's what happens in public schools, especially in urban centers across this nation. And so it is the only safe haven. Many of these schools are open, and they feed children breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And you talked about it's the only safe place that they have. It's safer than homes. And so schools provide that. They don't just provide education. That wasn't always the case. And when the school system has to deal with all of those realities, before they educate, then we wind up in the kinds of situations that we're winding up in. And so it's easy for people to say that the district and the kids are failing. And so it's the worst place in the world, because the people who say that won't address the social ills that the society we live in, refuses to address.
Well, the social as well as the economic ills that many of the parents in public school.
Well, those go hand in hand.
Absolutely. You know, sometimes they do pretty much, but sometimes the family may be dealing with social issues they can't cram, but they do have the economic resources. So it's not. I used to think that I got all these poor families in my classroom and everything, and many of them were not. But they were dealing with dysfunctional family for one reason or other. Like you said, molestation, a lot of different with the boys and the girls, you know, in the classroom. And these were from affluent families. So it used to be a time where, and it does in many cases go hand in hand, but it's not always the case. This is why you have to really get to know your students. And, you know, if they feel comfortable with you, they'll confide in you. But again, you know, I think administrators in many cases should listen to their teachers and what their teachers have to say, but they're more concerned. Schools are run like corporations, and really pretty much they always have been. And the principal is the CEO of that, and we're the rest of us are employees. But a good CEO will listen to what his employees have to say and make moves. But since No Child Left Behind and all these other things have come into place, a lot of schools are under pressure to maintain the numbers. So, you know, we're dealing with the bottom line, you know, as well with the students coming in. But, you know, the students come in all of these vicarious, situations, and we're going to, you know, teach them all, and we're going to love them up and pet them up and do everything that we have before we can even start teaching. And you know what? And you didn't even mention, in addition of, you know, I used to have a drawer full of clothes, extra right. uniforms and stuff, you know, just to give, because they wear them out and they come to school dirty and the parents wasn't watching them and all this other kind of stuff. And I call the parents and say, well, you got to come with clean uniforms. But we also have to supply them with school supplies, you know, in addition to everything else, which can come into a pretty penny when you got 35, 40 students in that classroom and nobody's got a pencil, you know. But it comes with the job, and it's not a complaint. It's just something that we have to deal
so,
with.
So here's why all of this matters.
Yes.
You're a black male.
Yes.
And so I'd venture to say that in the schools you were in, they're predominantly black, the students.
Yes.
Safe to say that.
Yes, yes, yes.
And so yes. You are as rare as the Hope Diamond when it comes to education, a black male.
I would hope that would be as valuable.
Well, that's my point. Because there are not black males in education. When I was a young person, mm-hmm. Even in the school that I talked about, As a young kid coming up,
what?
I had black male teachers. No, I'm Garfield Avenue.
Okay.
This was when I was in early school.
Okay.
We had that. I had black male instructors.
And you had them in Washington High School as well, because I went to Washington, and we had, you know, Mr.
No,
Moore and some
no,
others.
No, I didn't have that. They mm-hmm. were they weren't there. They came after
the year. That's right, right. You were a year ahead.
So, but
that's
I'm talking right. about in early development in grade school.
Oh, yeah.
Black males were there, but black males do not go into education.
I didn't even have a male teacher until high school, personally.
So let's look at the dynamics of what even Sam is talking about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Men rarely.
Okay. Let alone, I did not have a man of color teach me until college.
So mm-hmm. men, for the most part, don't go into education. In public education,
unless they're in a superintendent position, males traditionally ran the school system, or they were the principal at the school. The headmaster was a male, and the rest were females.
So
10,000% agree.
So the point is, mm-hmm. young boys don't get to see a male like you. You're the exception, not the rule. You're the exception, not the rule. Mm-hmm. Why is that important? Because young boys need discipline more than most.
Well, there's a saying, if I may, excuse me.
Go ahead.
A man must speak to the man in the boy. And I'm not putting anything against single women, parents, and things like that. But at some point, a man must speak to the man in the boy. You know, so that's... And also, a man, I wouldn't venture to try to teach, you know, young girls, you know, when they come in their menstrual period and what this, but I mean, that's fine. And there's a lot of men and uncles and male role models and families that do, that are raising girls, and they're doing a great job at it. But for the most part, when we had the acting up, when the boys were acting up in the classroom, the teacher would call us, you know, the black men, to come in and, you know, and straighten them out. And a lot of time it wasn't a physicality thing. You know, they wanted some attention. They wanted somebody to talk to.
So let me ask you something, mm-hmm. man. You spent all that time in Milwaukee Public Schools. From your perspective, you're no longer employed by the district, so you can speak freely. And this is one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on.
Mm-hmm.
And you're no longer a member of the MTEA, Milwaukee Teachers Education Association.
Right.
So you can be free in your dialogue. And it's important, and the conversation is important.
Yes.
So, and the fact that you are not no longer connected to those things. What are your thoughts on right now where people say that the district is a total failure and it needs to be dismantled from the perspective of all the years you spent there, and that far too many children are failing? Is that on the district and do you think that the district needs to be dismantled and we try something else?
Yeah, but what is it? Something? That's what I'm afraid of. No, right. I don't think so. The solution. And again, many of these decisions are being made by people who never taught for 1 minute in a classroom. So, I mean, you really have to listen to your teachers, support your teachers, listen to them, listen to what they have to say. I think the teachers are pretty much thrown to the side, and it's come to the point where just keep them in the classroom, keep them quiet, keep them out of hallways, and keep them in those seats. And that's not instruction. So we're dealing primarily with discipline problems in the classroom, and one word that you're not supposed to use. You're never supposed to use this word that I'm getting ready to use.
Suspension.
Control.
Right.
No, control. So you're supposed to manage the classrooms and not control them, because control them means that you're going to be, you know, that means that a lot of these students are going to be in the office, and that's not where the principals want them to be.
So when you have edicts that say don't suspend children,
mm-hmm.
And Milwaukee Public Schools lives with that edict
and dies
because the society says, if you suspend my child and I work, now I have to, what happens to me?
I got to take the day off.
Yeah.
But then they have holding rooms also. So you may have more students in that holding room than you have in class. You know, because teachers are, and then you have one teacher in that holding, and these are really strong teachers for the most part in those holding rooms, but their job primarily is to take the disruptive students out of the classroom and put them somewhere, and also they're supposed to have work for them to do while they're in that.
So, when you have numbers as broad as the numbers that you were talking about of disruptive children, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, that impacts an entire educational system. Is it safe to say that?
Yeah, absolutely. And you have to plan accordingly. But you don't have the resources.
Listen, we've got hold the thought. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Welcome back. back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. I'm still joined by Michael Brocks, a good friend and retired educator from Milwaukee Public Schools. Now, let's have at it.
Yes, sir.
So, who should be held accountable for children not being educated? Is it fair to blame the schools? You know, the schools don't educate kids. People who are in the schools educate kids. So is it safe to blame? Do teachers hold some you know, responsibility in the fact that kids aren't being educated? You're a former educator. Is it safe to point the finger at educators?
Well, Earl, all hands on deck. It's going to take everybody. It takes the administrator, it takes the teacher, it takes the parents, you know, and also the politicians that provide the schools with the resources that they need to educate the students. So everybody has to be of concern. It's all hands on deck. Sometimes, and we all have to work together. Especially, you know, with the elementary level kids, K-4 through say 8th grade, and these are new parents. And raising a child doesn't come with a handbook, as you know. So we all have to work together. You have to make the school culture something that invites parents in. They feel comfortable coming in. Too many times the parents don't even want to come to the school because they don't feel welcome.
Well, there's not. It's safe to say that most administrators have been educated in a manner that they understand or should understand all of those different pieces that have to come together to put the puzzle together in order to make sure that children get educated. I don't think there's any person who reaches the administration level.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about now just mm-hmm. principals. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about superintendents.
Sure.
Who have that responsibility to put all those pieces together.
Well, administrators are under a lot of pressure, all administrators, vertically speaking, to perform and to crunch numbers. And they look at suspensions, they look at successes, they look at failures. Are these schools working? What are the costs involved? So, you know, it's run like a business. So that is their primary.
Is that an issue? Is that a problem to you?
No, but it's a necessary
evil. Let me say this, because if in fact a superintendent
mm-hmm.
who look, that can't be an easy job under any circumstances, right?
No.
You know,
virtue of
the, you know, you're the CEO,
right? Right.
You know,
right.
And yet, right. And all of the other pieces that go along with mm-hmm. it in public schools,
mm-hmm.
by law, public schools have to educate every child.
Every child.
They don't get to pick of the litter. None of those things.
Right.
This is who you got.
Mm-hmm. This is what we're
by law with. You're yes. going to educate them.
Yes.
Many of the private schools can, you know, in many instances, pick and choose.
Well, it's not supposed to be, because it's supposed to be a first come, first serve.
Yeah,
you know, but I mean,
supposed to. If ifs and nuts were candy and butts, what a wonderful world it would be.
Yes.
Okay.
It's supposed to be a first come, first serve basis. When the students that apply first, they by law are supposed to be accepted at school. But the thing about it is, and let's keep it real, many of these students have been recycled through a lot of these private schools and MPS schools, and the administrators at these schools know who the troublemakers are. And they try to avoid them, but in many cases they'll bring them back.
But
in the private schools,
they don't bring them back into the private school for the most part. Once a kid, again, the private schools don't have the edict by law that every child has to be educated.
But see, the thing about it is they're in competition for the dollars. With the public and private are both in competition for those. And the bottom line is count day. They want to make sure they got students in those seats on count day so that they get paid for it.
But here's the other aspect of that. Once the student is paid, the school, mm-hmm. the private school, is paid mm-hmm. for that student, mm-hmm. and the student leaves mm-hmm. the private school, mm-hmm. the money doesn't follow that student back to MPS.
No, it doesn't.
The
it
money
goes
stays.
Back into the pot. Goes back into the pot. Okay. Because their count day is, I think it's either two days a year. So they get paid for the first semester and for the second semester based on the number of students who are in their seat on that day.
So let me ask you this. So all of these private schools that have opened and private parochial schools and all of those things.
Yes.
And to say that they are doing a better job of educating kids because they are who they are, it's just not true.
It's not.
But at the root of that is the politic part of it.
Absolutely.
Because you have elected officials on the state level and national levels who support voucher schools and school choice. Mm-hmm. And I always say to people, mm-hmm. all of those people don't even know the root of vouchers. I know the people.
Well,
I knew the people.
I'm going to say
who started
it. I'm going to bring up one person's name. You know who I'm going to say? Polly Williams. Right?
Yeah, but her and Larry Howard.
And Larry Howard.
Okay, so I'm saying those are the people who created
State Representative that. Polly Williams,
yeah.
right?
So they created the whole thing. And Governor Tommy Thompson was the governor at the time. And so Polly's vision was all poor children, black children, should have an equal opportunity.
A choice.
On going to the best schools.
Mm-hmm. Their parents should have a choice.
And what separated and what kept their parents away from having choice was they didn't have the money. So you didn't have a choice to go to Pius if you didn't have the money to pay.
Right.
Until vouchers came into existence, you didn't have the money to go to what's the one over on Messimer, unless your parents had the money to pay mm-hmm. until vouchers mm-hmm. came into existence. Mm-hmm. When vouchers came into existence, mm-hmm. this is the backstory for all of you who may not know. And they allowed, it was so loose that there were people who opened schools in storefronts.
Right.
With no books, no education, no background.
Right.
Nothing.
I've taught in some of those schools.
Okay. So
Absolutely.
No credentials.
Absolutely.
No credentials,
no
none of that.
No accountability.
Right.
Nothing.
So
we know the horror stories.
So that happened. And they started taking kids away. We know that there are schools that pay parents to take students away from the public school system.
Well,
they offer them things.
Well, they may have four or five students that are coming out, and we're talking about hundreds of families. We're not talking about a small number here.
Right.
I think MPS is like 10,000 students shorter than they were last year because those families are
6,000 over the last 2 years and an additional 1,000 coming up next school year, 7,000 since 2021.
And that can cause a couple of schools to close down. Now here we are with vacant buildings. You got to keep the lights on. You have to keep the heat. You got
to
keep the...
Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.